Session number 16713, Mr. M. Waterston, Reel 18.
Mr. Waterston, Reel 18. There must have been a time limit on how long you worked flat out, as it were, down the pits, and then they eased off with you. Is that right?
Well, the had as many prisoners of war as I possibly could have down the pits, and then I think when we started winning the war and all that, they started to realise that they shouldn't have all these many men down the pit. And they were giving them jobs, you know, the farms and factories and different things like that, see. Because they were getting pushing Russians down then, see. They took us out and they were pushing Russians in.
This would be slave labour.
Oh, aye, aye. Slave labour. Yeah, boys. The Russians, if they said no, they weren't going to work, bang, 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 one after the other. Oh, God. I'll tell you what, I've seen them blokes, the Russians, line up, and we used to line up in fives to be counted for a roll call. And I've seen them line up in fives, and three of them been carrying two men in between them, arm in arm like that. Two dead and three alive. So they could get five men's rations. And I've actually seen that. Oh, dear me.
How hard did you work down the pits? I mean, it was a German mine, and German coal will drive industry.
Oh,
and
dear me.
It's war work, in a sense.
Yeah.
How hard did you work?
We used to have to work hard.
They made you?
Mm.
You couldn't slack off, or
no slacking off.
Put too much stone in with the coal, or mix
things
up. Oh, there's
things doing like that. Oh, aye. Putting spanners in the works many a time. Snap the belts, conveyor belts.
Were you found out doing this kind of thing? Did they realise what you were doing?
Many a time. A lot of.
What would happen then?
Did you find out, like the drinking German? Thinking boss, they never used to report you. They used to give you a good hiding. And what happened down there, when you come up there and said, them bookers has been eaten, they used to say, oh, we can't do nothing about that. They're in charge here down there. You had some nice blokes in all mine there. I didn't say they were all blinking rotten, you know, but there's some nice blokes that would make things easier for you, and you know. You used to have an old, like a, what we would call a master shifter, you know, like a bloke that used to work on the night shift, you know, all the time, in charge of the, he used to be a nice bloke, and he could speak a little bit of English, and he used to say, you come with me tonight, Frank, you know, my Francis, let's call us Francis. You come with me tonight, and he used to just walk around with him day and out all night. And he would sit down and he'd shout his snap with us. He'd talk, and he used to like to talk his English. He's a nice little old bloke, he was, an old bloke.
Did you become quite fluent in German?
Well, not fluent like, but I mean, I could pass. You get myself the way around, get to where I wanted to be and get what I wanted. A bit rough like was.
Were you
mostly Oberschlesian, where, you know, that we. I tried to learn Polish and all, but I couldn't make out of Polish.
Were you able to have any humour amongst yourselves and, you know, to enlighten your morale and make it a bit more.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we, as I say, we had our dances, I mean, we had our concerts, we had some good comedians, we had some good, you know, when you get about 300 blokes together, you can always find something out of them that we used to go around canvas and, you know, have like sing blokes that could sing, you know, or something like that. We used to agents for them, you know, like, and get them to come and sing for a couple of tabs, you know, on a night time. They'll be on the stage the other night, and get a couple of tabs.
Was there any planned attempts to take it out of the Germans in a comical, you know, funny way?
There's a tuck that Mickey out of them, somewhat silly on the stage when we were blinking. When we were on the stage, you know, they were sitting there, they couldn't understand what we were saying, and the adult interpreter wasn't telling them, he wasn't gone. And but they used to back references to them, you know, and all sorts, you know, squades and oh, dear me. The poor lads used to laugh, they just used to laugh and all, like, you know, sort of style. We used to get dressed up as women and all sorts, and they used to laugh at us, but we were talking the Mickey out of them all the time.
Well, morale must have got pretty low at times.
It used to get pretty low. But, I mean, as I say, in the 20 years of 1941 and 1943, was two good years, bloody end of 1943. It was good years when we had good supplies of Red Cross parcels and that, and good supplies of clothes and cigarettes and what have you, you know, from home, you know. But after then, when it started to get, oh, no, up to 1944, January 1944, no, oh, 1944, it wasn't so bad, like, but it was getting, you were starting to get bothered with air raid, you know, warnings then, you know, and I was on a, I got myself a job in charge of the team of digging the air raid trenches in the, around the camp, you know, for when they used to come over. Nobody went in them, though. I just used to stand and watch them.
Must have realised that war was turning your way.
Oh, war, we knew. I mean, you boys, for 6 weeks I walked about with a biscuit tin in me, wondering me, I'm with a working party, you know, they, when they were digging the trenches, and all, and I had a biscuit tin slung over like an area shelter, in like a gas mask, you know. Walked around for 6 weeks, and it wasn't until one day the blinking Gestapo come in and in the camp and started raiding the camp, and blinking Sergeant Major says to me, he says, must have better pour that tin in the trench. Says, get one of the lads to cover it up with soil and that, you know, when we're digging the trench, and filled it up. He says, fill it up, he says, and walk, come away and leave it. He says, it was the blinking camp wireless. Used to go down in the offices, billet every night there, and hear the news every night and what was happening and everything. When you sometimes knew mad about, when you mad about the invasion, the landings and then what the juries did. I was well. I was on the camp we built. I got a job on the camp and I was working at the bank, and I was labouring the two bricklayers building the camp, the brick camp. Instead of having wood camps, to start building brick camps for us. I wasn't there very long, I didn't think.
So, when you heard of the invasion on your camp radio, what did that do for you?
Girl got drunk. We used to provide it. I was once on this working party, on A72 party. I was working at bank. It was when after I had my foot hurt, and I was working at bank and that. And we used to have to unload the explosives for down the pit, you know. Unload them into the trucks, push them round. Well, we used to have a lad who used to drive one of these locomotives. Push them round, up to the bottom of where the cages were, the shaft, you know. And we used to have to help the two lads that was loading the shaft. We used to have to help to shove them in so they would gone down into the seam where, you know, into a big explosive locker, you know, and that's where they used to draw the, keep all the explosives and all up to the pit, because it was a great big pit. It was a hell of a lot of them. There were thousands working there. It just come to my notice one, this was shoving one, and I says to one of the blokes, I says, look at this box here. And one of the, I didn't know whether you've ever seen them, the way they used explosives and the detonator pins, you know, on wires. They were all in, packed separately, you know. But they were all in, like, you know, the how the margarine boxes used to come, you know, and boxes of margarine, you know, with the thin wood, you know, and all that. Wait, on the top of this wagon, there's a tube that we were pushing, were loaded up. One of the lats had been broken off. And I didn't take much notice, and I says, I'm going to keep out the road. I didn't want to know the day with this. But when we got it up for the trade, we told the bloke that was in charge of us, the German, I says, that to try and clear all the lads that I was with. That was broken coming off the wagon, off the big wagon. And he looked at it and he just knocked it down. But apparently there'd been some powder, explosive, and detonator stolen off that when they got them down and started checking them up and all that. And there was detonators and explosives stolen, missing. And, of course, the Gestapo was in, making inquiries and all that. And, of course, this bloke said, well, Frank told me that there was, you know, straight into the camp. I was up walk with a float. I was in bed, sweat teeming out on us. And the blinking Gestapo come in, two blokes with leather coats on and all that. And the guard commander, that's him there. Hark me out of the blinking bed. The doctor says, you kind of do that with him, get him back in there. I come out there and I was sitting at the table wrapped up. The lads wrapped us up in blankets and all that. And they pulled every blinking inch of my bed to bits. Every inch of my bed to bits. And they keep saying, safety, safety, soap. Tunes of soap, you know, and I don't mean we had to. That was on all the bit that we had, a bit square with our bed, we had boxes, the Red Cross boxes were full of soap. Not what we used to see, you know, what we used to barter with. Started after my bed the bits. Oh, Bob was playing. Oh, Bob was in and he kept getting knocked about and all. He said, yeah, now today with it, now today with it. And Sergeant Major told us what was the matter like after it went out. He says, what was, come in to say if I was all right. I says, what was all that for, Chuck? He says, well, is there not now? I says, no, I says, I don't know about it. He says, there's some blinking explosives missing. I says, I bet that blinking whitey blinking told them I'd reported it. So when I went back to work, 2 or 3 days after, I says to him, I says, let the Gestapo in. He goes, no. He says, did they come and see you? I says, come and see me. I says, they pulled me to bits, they tore me clothes off me back and everything. He started to cry. I didn't expect that to happen to you and all that. But they did find a couple of pools, you know, they'd done it, you know, because they. I mean, the underground was there.
Was that your only brush with the Gestapo?
That was about the only brush I ever had. I was scared stiff and all, like. When he went out, Bloody hell, yeah, everybody was standing around. The sweat was pouring off everybody. The scouts were going to go and reach through the hood, you know. Because it was, you know, the ledges around the hood, you know, where they joined together, you know, that we had tins of condensed milk and all sorts. Underneath the floorboards, you boys, the blinking corks was popping out of the blinking. The raisin wine that we made, the lads used to buy, get yeast and all that, you know, and used to feed it with yeast and sugar, and it was going pop, pop, pop underneath the floorboards. Oh, dear, everybody was walking about there. They didn't know where we had to look and all like that until they went out. Bah, boys, that's what the sergeant major boldly called. He says, everybody all right? We're all in a sweat. Yeah, boys.
Did you know the reputation of the Gestapo at that time?
Did we know what the
reputation was?
Oh, yeah, we knew the reputation. Yeah, boys. I've seen them hark the blinking civilians out the pit, man, and blinking well breathe them up, man. Oh, German officers, man. I mean, yeah, boys, the Germans that couldn't get us the day out, I mean, I say the blinking German Gestapo bloke put a blinking revolver in one of our lads' mouth and blew his head off. Oh, lovely lad in the Welsh Guards. Great bloke. On this, you know, I tell you, the separate working party, you know, I used to work in the wood. And all he said to the guard was, he says, I'm not going to work with that old man because he puts under us. He says, I'll work with anybody else, another party. He says, anybody, he says, I'll deem you work with the party. I will not work with him. And you look till the stand to attention. We stood up to attention where your boys were head and shoulders bigger than the blinking guard, and he just put the revolver up. He says, are you going to work? And he said, no, and he just the blew his head off. And we didn't get a blinking full military funeral for him. And this man, that man that blew his head off, there was lads from other working camps that knew that this guard had been there for, so we used to call him, his name was John Sebastian, and we used to call him John the Bastard. And he, there was two lads from Houghton, from my company, they had to go to the Nuremberg trials to blinking, he was on the Nuremberg trials, and he got time there, jailed there. I think he got shot, really, there.
I was going to ask you if, you know, these things did get reported eventually.
Yeah.
Were you never, and it's going ahead a little bit, of course, but were you never at any time asked to what was happening to you in prison camp as against the guards or the way they treat you? You know, when you were released, were you asked for any information?
We give a lot of information about who we treat.
Well, we'll come to that later, of course. So
there wasn't a great lot to a mind. There wasn't a lot, you know, of inquiries like that, because it was all reported, catalogued, and already that were made by the senior officers and all that. Our senior warrant officers and that was in charge of working parties and all that. They had all reports and all that we had out and everything like that.
Were there any guards who were particularly unpleasant to you that you got your revenge on in some way? Something
Men
happened to them?
Nice ones in all, mind. I got to tell you about the New Zealander. One morning we were foreman up to go to work. Little Scott. About the same build as you and you. Pit helmet on, and this young guard, he was badly wounded, he had been, and he used to keep gunning off his head a bit, you know, and he hit you with his rifle, you know, to move you in, and what he thumped this lad with a rifle to move him, to get him to move in the line, and the lad just took his rifle off and clobbered him straight across the lung with it, and down he went. And your boys, he was this lad who just hoisted into the pokey there for about, about 3 weeks, I think. He got New Zealand, he couldn't care a jot for anybody. He didn't. He's in my room and all.
What was the worst aspect of prison of war life for yourself? What was the most difficult part you found to deal with?
Yeah. I don't know. I had a corporate. I just seemed to talk things natural, you know. But I did have one or two sessions, like I say, when I was went down with my ulcers. I was really in a bad way then. But just help from the lads and all that, they picked you up and that.
In what ways did you know that the war was really coming to an end now and freedom was close?
Oh, well, I mean, when we were going out to work, I mean, everything was slack and all that, you know, and we knew that things was happening. I mean, I was up in Krakow, and the Russians, I mean, we could hear the Russians firing, bombing and that, you know, and then it came to a point when we had orders from the main Stalags to get the men back to the Stalags, and we set off on the 29th of January 1945. It was 30 degrees below zero. There was about 6 foot of snow and everything. And instead of all our Red Cross parcels, they would be divided out among the men. And we all made sledges to pack them on so we could pull them, because we knew that was the only group we were going to get for donkeys. But the Russians come that fast from Krakow downwards. They were firing over our heads, and they kept us running for 2 days, a day, a night and a day, to keep in ahead of the, because their German artillery was retreating and all that, and they were going past us, and we weren't going fast enough. And we discarded nearly all our Red Cross stuff and all that, because we just kept the bare necessities. And I mean, we never stopped for them 3 days, probably.
Where did you sleep?
You used to sleep as pushes in a great big barn, here barn. And we could wrap ourselves up in the straw and that. We didn't take our shoes off, though, because it was too cold. We took our boots off. You used to have to go and melt them in front of the fire before you could get them back on again. The leather used to have to turn up. With them being wet and that, you know, they used to freeze. And it was from then on, it was rather tough going. We had, when our group started to give out, and we always have to start and for old, you know.
Where did you find food when yours started to give way?
Well, we used to plunder and rob and, you know, yes, whatever we saw was ours.
Were men dropping out?
Oh, men were dropping out right, left and centre. And they were just throwing them onto the carts and all that.
Mm-hmm. Were the Germans themselves begin to show signs of being frightened that the Russians
were? They were frightened, aye. We came right away down from Krakow down to Teschen. That was where our camp was. We went from Teschen right further into Germany. Went back to Stalag 8B. Then from Stalag 8B again, we went right away back onto the blinking Czechoslovakian border and went round and round like that to avoid advancing armies in the front, you know. And we marched from then right up till April, when the weather started to be getting lovely. And we were right up in Austria then. The weather was lovely, and they arrested us for about 3 weeks. For a fortnight it was, for a fortnight. And we were just gunning our own cards and drove off the civilians and all that, which they were glad to give us the, you know, the...
They'd be wanting to please you a little bit now,
no,
would they?
No, they wanted to. And then, we were in, I was reading up in Landschutz, a place called Landschutz, when it was my turn to be chief cook and bottle washer, you know, and the other lads used to go out foraging, and they went out looking for grub and that. And as they were out, I didn't miss them there, the American army started to come through on that transport, picking the Germans up. And there was one old German, he used to hate all our guts. He used to tackle tabs and 15, you know, he'd say he would do this for us and all that, and he used to tackle tabs, and if he wasn't doing now, the lads used to hate him. When the Americans came up, in a big truck, looking for the guards and all that. One guard that they tackled, he was a guy who was going to get a bit rough treatment, and we spoke to the Americans about. So that one of the Americans wrote a card out for him to keep in his pocket.
He
just had to show it. But they went down into where the billet where the guards were, and they hawked them all out, put them on in his truck. This old fella, he must have been a loud fella about 60 years old, like, you know, this car, he was getting on the truck around. Old, he's not getting on the truck. Says, what's the matter like? You know, the lad said, we hate him, he's terrible, him, he pinched out tabs and all sorts. So they tied a rope round his waist and run him a back of the truck. Oh, Sergeant Major says to one of the girls, he says, you're not going to take that room. He says, you'll either run or walk, or if we get pulled along there. He says, we're no messing about with him. He says, if he doesn't, he says, we'll just shoot him, that's all. Sergeant Major says, I better shoot him, and he says, let him run there. But he run away with him, and he was screaming.
What was the first reaction when the Americans appeared?
Oh, dear me. We didn't know what to expect, really, to turn it. It was a big bridge building company, and they were ahead of the schedule.
And must have been
we were had
must we, have been a we tremendous
were,
moment.
We were probably down to no clothes again, you know, as bad as we were in 1940. And I had them for years. A pair of boots belonged to a dead man, you know, that the fit me, and I only had a pair. The last week, I'd worn my boots out, and I was just walking with a pair of sand shoes on my feet.
Must have been a tremendous moment after being in prison so long.
Me. We didn't know what to do, man. We came back to Nuremberg at that time, when they liberated us. We just made our own way back, and through the American lines and all that. And we were in the big factory in just outside of Nuremberg, Regensburg. And it was a lovely day, beautiful day. And we were just wondering, you know, saying, foraging about to see if we could get grub, but not really, and which way we were going to get back to, you know. We were supposed to report to an airfield, you know, but there was that many gun to the airfield, we didn't, so we said, if we went there, we might, our idea was to try and get back to Paris. And we saw it's a bloke, two Americans loading a wagon up with food packs, you know. So we went into this office and we asked the sergeant in charge if there was any transport gone back, you know, to France. Where he says, "You blokes in lucky." He says, "See that officer there? says, go and ask him if he'll let you travel with him. He says, if he'll let you travel with him, he says, I'll give you the group to travel with. So we went, and one of the lads was big lad, he was a corporal. He went and had a word for him. And he said, oh, no bother. And your boys, we've got blankets and everything on this open wagon. All the group that we had cigarettes and everything under there. We rode back, we stopped at Nancy. He got lodgings at Nancy for us that night. And then the next day we would come off and back down to France.